Welcome to the CancerCare Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at CancerCare. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Tanitha, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's program, Medical Update on Mantle Cell Lymphoma. And today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care, the Lymphoma Research Foundation, and a number of other cancer organizations. And it really is because of that collaboration that we have been able to reach so many of you on the call today. We have on the call today over 568 participants. So it's really a credit to all of you. There are lots of you on the call. Now, you come from all over the United States. You come from large cities and small cities. You come from suburban areas as well as rural and frontier communities. And we have international participants from Argentina, Africa, Australia, Canada, Chile, India, Mexico, the Netherlands, Saudi Arabia, and the UK. So you're really from all over the world. And I would like to turn your attention for a moment to all the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials, there is information about our speakers and the topics they're going to cover. There is information about all of the different collaborating organizations and how you can contact them. And also, there is an evaluation form, and I would ask you to take a moment and complete that evaluation form. When you think about it, who but each of you can best tell us the programs you would like us to offer in the future and the topics? You are really our best source of doing the things that you need, so please tell us what you'd like. Indeed, today's program and the topic in terms of mantle cell lymphoma, the focus, is something that many of you have been asking for so long, and we are so happy to be able to meet that need. Now, today's program is supported through an unrestricted educational grant to the Lymphoma Research Foundation from Millennium, the Takeda Oncology Company. And we really want to thank them for their support of our program today, and special thanks to Lymphoma Research Foundation as well for their supporting this program. And now we have just wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to start by introducing our first speaker. Our first speaker is Dr. Michael Williams, and Dr. Williams is the Beard S. Laval Professor of Medicine, Chief Hematology Section, Hematology Oncology Division, Director, Hematologic Malignancies Program, University of Virginia School of Medicine. And Dr. Williams, as you can see, wears many hats, and he is going to present to you an overview of lymphoma. Then he's going to talk about mantle cell lymphoma, an overview, and then he's going to present treatment options for newly diagnosed. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Williams.
Well, thanks very much, and my thanks to each of you for taking part in the teleconference today. As mentioned, we've got a very large number of participants, and I know there's going to be varying degrees of familiarity with lymphoma. I'm going to give a brief overview of non-Hodgkin lymphomas in general, then we'll talk about mantle cell specifically. So let's proceed. So non-Hodgkin lymphomas are actually a very complex group of over 60 different individual types of lymphomas. These arise from the malignant transformation of normal B or T lymphocytes that become transformed and give rise to these populations of cells that ultimately present as a clinical lymphoma. It's a very common disease. There's over 65 to 70,000 new cases per year in the United States alone. In Western countries, these are mostly B-cell types of lymphoma. In Asian countries, the T-cell lymphomas are a bit more common. And because many of these lymphomas, of course, can be cured with current therapy, or many of the more indolent lymphomas have very long survivals, even essentially they become chronic diseases for patients, there are really hundreds of thousands of people in the United States alone who are living with their lymphoma or have been cured of the disease. So a very common clinical problem. So in terms of management, the clinical spectrum of non-Hodgkin lymphoma ranges from very indolent diseases that can have slow progression, typically not curable with standard therapies, but can be followed for many years, often without treatment, whereas there are also more aggressive types of non-Hodgkin lymphoma that can have more rapid progression, but paradoxically, in a way, they're much more often curable with existing therapies. So the treatment very much depends on the specific type of the lymphoma, the stage of the disease, in other words, how far it may have disseminated, is it localized or is it involving multiple sites in the body? And also the treatment depends upon the patient characteristics. What coexisting illnesses might that individual have? What's their age? What's their ability to tolerate a proposed treatment plan? And so any time a diagnosis of lymphoma is made, I think it's important that expert hematopathology review is done to verify the specific type of lymphoma, since, as mentioned, that is a big determinant in how we approach them. And also, when it's indicated or when there's any question about some difficulty of management, then I think having a referral to a lymphoma specialist can be quite useful. And I might just comment that I find that overall for patients newly diagnosed with a lymphoma, it's often a very confusing time. I mean, of course, it's anxiety-provoking, but in a way it's somewhat abstract to think and try to put together all these different aspects I just mentioned. It's not necessarily sort of a linear treatment algorithm, say, as it might be with, let's say, if someone has a solid tumor like breast cancer, where if it's localized, it's primarily a surgical disease. If it's more advanced, it's primarily chemotherapy. So a lot of twists and turns to lymphoma management that make it a little more confusing. So again, I think it's important whenever there's questions or difficulties to see a lymphoma specialist about that. So let's talk about mantle cell in particular. Now, this has been a long-standing interest of mine. It comprises only about 5% of all the non-Hodgkin lymphomas in the U.S. That's about 3,500 to 4,000 cases per year. It's more common in men than in women. It's more common in patients older than 60 than those younger. It certainly occurs in younger individuals, though. It was only recognized, really, as a distinct subtype of non-Hodgkin lymphoma about 20 years ago. And part of that recognition came from the identification of a very particular molecular marker in these in this type of lymphoma called a translocation between chromosomes 11 and 14 that leads to expression of a protein called cyclin D1. And those are very important markers to help distinguish mantle cell from other non-Hodgkin lymphomas. Sort of, in a way, like the non-Hodgkin lymphomas in general, mantle cell can be both clinically and biologically very heterogeneous. It's not part of the discussion today just because of time, but I can tell you that there have been a lot of recent advances in our understanding of mantle cell at both the cellular and molecular levels, and that's helping us understand why there can be such differing clinical behaviors of the disease, very indolent to more aggressive, and also providing some clues that help us identify for an individual patient what they might expect in terms of a disease course, a treatment response, and even identifying some of the molecular targets that might prove useful for new therapies. So with regard to treatment in general, I can just say that there are a proportion of mantle cell patients who present with sort of a slow-paced, low-volume, asymptomatic disease who may not need immediate treatment and can be followed until they're showing more disease activity, but others may present with advanced disease and really need prompt therapy. So one of the questions is, what do we do to treat these differing patients? So let me just identify a few key issues for the initial therapy of mantle cell lymphoma. First of all, we have to recognize that there's really no standard treatment approach for initial therapy. There's no study as yet that has shown what we might call a best frontline treatment. There are, however, a number of promising new therapeutic agents. I'm going to comment on some of these, and Dr. Leonard will in his comments as well. And I would say here the good news is that there are lots of very promising and active new agents that are now in various phases of clinical study. Another key issue is how best can we individualize patient therapy? How do we recognize who needs treatment right now versus maybe who can have it deferred? And if you're going to treat, how aggressive do we have to be with treatment? So, again, these clinical and molecular markers are going to be quite important for that. There's always a question about what do we do with stem cell transplantation? Should that be used routinely or in certain patients? And finally, I think the big question is, are we getting closer to being able to cure mantle cell lymphoma? We're not there yet, but I think with a lot of the progress you're going to hear about, we're moving toward, if not cure, at least very durable and sustained remissions, which lead to a better quality of life. So let's talk about sort of three different treatment groups as far as how we often clinically subset mantle cell patients for therapy. And I'm going to break those into groups that I'll call the younger and fit patient, an older but fit patient, and then people who are elderly or frail or may have significant comorbid illnesses that might impair the ability to get treatment. So as I said, frontline treatment is controversial. For younger patients, I'm going to just in general say that that includes individuals, say, under 60 to 65 years of age. Typically, those patients get treated with a combination immunochemotherapy regimen. In other words, rituximab plus some type of cytotoxic therapy, which could be the CHOP regimen, the hyper-CVAD regimen, with or without high-dose methotrexate and cytarabine. There's been recent data that's very intriguing that the use of high-dose cytarabine, also called ARA-C, might give better and more durable responses. So that's sort of renewed interest in using some of these newer regimens, either with or without an autologous stem cell transplant to consolidate that initial response. The Nordic group in Northern Europe has published very interesting data suggesting that that these an aggressive regimen in selected patients can give very durable responses, but that needs to be verified with longer follow-up. There's also a study right now by the European Mantle Cell Lymphoma Network that's looking at incorporating this high-dose cytarabine and transplant. So, and I might just make a comment here that I'll emphasize again in a second, and that is that I think as we go forward, I think these very intensive therapies are going to become somewhat less frequent, including transplant, as we get better agents to move into the front line, better regimens, perhaps using a maintenance or consolidation approach. And I'll say a little more about that in a minute. Now, what about patients who are what I have called older and fit, meaning maybe they're above 60 or 65, but in good health, no serious coexisting illness? I mean, probably the most commonly used regimen there is this rituximab plus CHOP chemotherapy regimen. It gives very high response rates, 90% or better. Almost half of those are complete remissions, but it's not curative, and the average duration of that response is only about 18 to 24 months. So that's one of the challenges with mantle cell, is that there are a number of treatments we can use to get good responses, but it's keeping those remissions into a longer duration that's been a challenge. There was very recent data that's been presented from Dr. Matthias Rommel and a German from a large German study that compared rituximab with an agent bendamustine, which is a chemotherapy drug that's been used in Germany for many years. It's now approved in the U.S. for treatment of chronic lymphocytic leukemia, but also very active in mantle cell and other lymphomas. So Dr. Rommel compared rituximab CHOP with rituximab plus bendamustine, and the new combination appeared essentially as effective with a longer response duration in the preliminary report, seemed to be well tolerated. There's a confirmatory trial now going on in the U.S., but assuming that is also a positive study and the mature reported data from Dr. Rommel holds up, I think it's very likely that bendamustine and rituximab is going to move into one of the frontline treatment options for this disease. And then finally, what do we do with patients who are elderly or frail, have a lot of or have significant comorbid illness? I think if those patients are asymptomatic and have a very slow pace of disease, then I think observation and following them without treatment is reasonable. Other options would include things like rituximab alone, some very low-intensity chemotherapy regimen, or perhaps a combination of chemo, low-intensity chemo and rituximab. So Finally, I would just conclude by saying there are a number of newer approaches. As I mentioned earlier, there are several agents that are quite active in relapse mantle cell, such as bortezomib or Velcade. It's already FDA-approved for relapse mantle cell. Other drugs that are in development and trial now include lenalidomide or Revlimid, rituximab, which has some interest as a possible maintenance therapy after treatment in addition to part of induction. Bendamustine, I already mentioned. It's also called Treanda. And another drug, temsirolimus, which targets a pathway called the mTOR pathway that's active in many mantle cells. That drug's also called Toracell. So we're looking at ways now to incorporate these agents that are active in the relapse setting into frontline therapies, or to use them, so use them in combination initially, or to use them as, say, a consolidation or maintenance treatment to try to maintain a better response after that initial treatment. So to answer these kind of questions, I would encourage, you know, you and your physicians to consider participation in clinical trials that are testing these newer agents, because, A, it helps us move the field forward, learn more about how to treat mantle cell in better ways, and also potentially avails you of what may be a promising and effective new treatment. And Dr. Leonard is going to have more to say about some of those. So with that, I'll stop here and turn things back over to Carolyn. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Williams, for just an outstanding presentation and so informative. And I know there will be lots of questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. Our next speaker is Dr. John Leonard. Dr. Leonard also wears many hats. He's the Richard T. Silver Distinguished Professor of Hematology and Medical Oncology. He is Professor of Medicine, Weill Cornell Medical College. He is a Clinical Director, New York Cornell Center for Lymphoma and Myeloma, Chief Lymphoma Myeloma Service, Associate Director for Clinical Research, Weill Cornell Cancer Center. And Dr. Leonard has been a frequent presenter on our programs, and he is going to discuss treatment options for relapsed refractory disease, clinical trials, and communicating with your healthcare team. I now turn the program over with pleasure to Dr. Leonard.
Thanks very much, and it's a great pleasure to be here today and to be able to speak with all of you about both what is a challenging disease, but also one where there's lots of reason for hope and excitement. And part of my topic is clinical trials, which I think offers a great deal of excitement given some of the novel agents that are coming along the pathway, and also because many of you, I'm sure, are dealing with or might in the future deal with relapsed mantle cell lymphoma. And so hearing about these different options, and I think, in fact, the reality is that we have a number of new options that I think are really making a big impact for patients, even if their disease has come back with mantle cell, which unfortunately it commonly does. But nonetheless, there are many people doing quite well despite the fact that that has happened. So I think as I approach, and Dr. Williams really gave a very nice overview in a short time of a complicated subject, when we talk about patients with mantle cell lymphoma where the disease has relapsed, to me, I think that I approach it, and I think most of us who see many patients with mantle cell, like Dr. Williams, and I approach it along the lines of, well, we want to know what's the situation now with the patient from the standpoint of how old they are, what kind of shape they're in, meaning are they in good health, fit, or are they sick and frail and have many other medical problems? That's the first thing, because that tells us what kind of shape a person is in to tolerate and what treatments may or may not be options based on kind of what kind of shape a person is in, which may differ depending on if someone is, you know, active and doing well versus someone who's quite debilitated from either mantle cell lymphoma or other medical problems. The second thing is really what type of treatment did the patient have before, how well did it work? And a general rule of thumb is, well, if you had one type of treatment and it worked very well for a long time, using a similar type of treatment might be something that could give some very good mileage versus using a very different type of treatment if the first treatment either didn't work well or worked for a short period of time or wasn't tolerated well, then changing gears to something that works in a whole different way might be a better idea. And then the third thing is really how important is it to treat the mantle cell lymphoma at that point in time and how sick the person is from the lymphoma. So, for instance, some people with mantle cell lymphoma, as Dr. Williams alluded to, may have relapsed disease, but it might be something that was just picked up on a scan or something that was incidentally found, really not causing any problems. You know it's there, and it's concerning that it's there. And maybe in the old days one used to say, well, mantle cell lymphoma's come back. We have to jump on it and go right after it and treat it aggressively. But in fact, for many people with mantle cell lymphoma, we don't necessarily have to rush to do anything. And so I think it's very important, and we'll talk a little bit later about communicating with your care team, but one of the issues is really what's your goal of therapy? What do you hope to accomplish by starting a new therapy? And sometimes if you're feeling well, there may not be any reason to do anything if the disease happens to be there and may be slowly progressing but isn't causing any problems. So really it's what happened, what kind of shape the person's in, what kind of treatment they've had before, and how well did it go, so to speak, and how well did it work. And then what's the immediate situation and what do you need to fix immediately when one is choosing a therapy? Because if you're feeling well, to choose a therapy that has a lot of side effects might not make a whole lot of sense. To take someone who's feeling well and make them feel sick from treatment. On the other hand, if you're feeling very sick from the disease because there are big lymph nodes causing pain or other problems, then it may be more appropriate to give a treatment that's a little stronger, perhaps even with more side effects, because you need something that's going to work quickly in that scenario to fix the acute problem. So this is very, very individualized, and what I'm sure that the patients and family members and friends on the line may recognize in their own course is that you can have 10 different patients and their sequence of treatments and the choices they make are very, very different. There's not a one-size-fits-all approach. So that being said, we do have many different possibilities for patients with relapsed mantle cell lymphoma. And they run the range from approved drugs to standard chemotherapy regimens that we commonly use to things like stem cell transplants to novel and new agents. And so I'll just briefly kind of touch on those different categories. So we do have an approved drug for relapsed mantle cell lymphoma. There's one drug approved in the U.S. for that. That is bortezomib or Velcade. Velcade is what's called a proteasome inhibitor. And the proteasome is basically the garbage can for the cell. And so by inhibiting the proteasome or putting the lid on the garbage can in the tumor cells, the garbage backs up. And the cell doesn't like that. And that results in tumor cells dying off or being unhappy or not growing as well because of the way that this treatment works. And so bortezomib or Velcade is generally given IV, usually twice a week, 2 weeks on, 1 week off. It shrinks the disease when you give it by itself in mantle cell lymphoma about a third of the time and usually for somewhere in the range of about 8-9 months or so. Some people have very good remissions, and it can even last for significantly longer. Others, unfortunately, like other agents, it doesn't work all that well, and there's a lot of interest in trying to sort out in which people a drug works in and which people a drug doesn't work in and why that is. But Velcade is a good drug. Its main side effects are low blood counts and what's called neuropathy, numbness and tingling of the fingers and toes. But that being said, for many people, it's a manageable treatment and can be quite useful option and, in fact, is FDA approved for patients with relapsed mantle cell lymphoma. And so clearly that is one option that many patients receive at one point in time or another. And we are doing studies looking at that drug in combination with standard treatments as initial treatment. We're also studying it in combination with other treatments in the relapse setting. So one of those combinations includes rituximab or Rituxan, which is an antibody treatment that most people receive as part of their initial treatment, and it is commonly used either by itself or in combination for people with relapsed mantle cell lymphoma. So, for instance, one combination that's commonly used is the combination of Velcade or bortezomib with rituximab for relapsed patients. So that's one option for many people with mantle cell lymphoma. There in Europe, Dr. Williams alluded to a drug called temsirolimus or Turicell. That is a drug that affects another pathway called the mTOR pathway, and that pathway in cells plays a role in the switches that are telling that cell to grow and makes that cell be active and cause problems. And so that drug, which is a drug that has been studied in many settings in the U.S., has also been studied in mantle cell lymphoma, and in fact in Europe is approved. So those of you in Europe may hear more about Turicell or temsirolimus for relapsed mantle cell lymphoma, and less about bortezomib, which is approved in the U.S. And the reason is that different countries and different parts of the world have different criteria for approving drugs for different situations. But Turicell is also a drug that can shrink the disease in mantle cell lymphoma roughly about a quarter of the time, and is also being looked at in combination. So there are a couple of other drugs that are approved for other things that are quite useful in mantle cell lymphoma. One, as you heard from Dr. Williams, a drug called bendamustine or Treanda, which is a chemotherapy drug that is given intravenously, usually every 3 to 4 weeks. And it is approved for other types of lymphoma as well as for chronic lymphocytic leukemia. But Dr. Williams and others have done various studies with bendamustine in patients with mantle cell lymphoma, and you heard him mention about bendamustine being used as initial treatment and a study suggesting that it's useful there. It's also useful in the relapsed lymphoma setting, and particularly in mantle cell lymphoma. And so that's one other possibility. And then there is another drug called lenalidomide or Revlimid, which is a pill. It is in the same family as thalidomide. And both of these drugs have a number of different both direct and indirect effects on mantle cell lymphoma cells. It can interfere with blood vessels. It can activate the immune system. It can flick switches in the tumor cells so they don't grow as well and they die off. And so the lenalidomide or Revlimid is FDA approved for other scenarios, particularly multiple myeloma. And this drug also has activity, meaning it can shrink tumors in patients with mantle cell lymphoma. And so that is a drug that's not FDA approved for mantle cell lymphoma, but is sometimes used in this setting and has been useful in many different scenarios. And so now we have lots of different combinations, different studies that are looking at combinations, let's say, of bendamustine plus Velcade plus Rituxan, or lenalidomide plus Rituxan, or combinations and different sequences of these different drugs. And so those are a couple of the things that are getting used in patients with mantle cell lymphoma. The other sorts of things that people often use are standard chemotherapy drugs that are used in other settings. So there are combinations of chemotherapy like a regimen called RICE, or a regimen called R-hyper-CVAD that Dr. Williams mentioned that is commonly used or sometimes used as an initial treatment. And these may also be used as for patients with relapse disease. Depending on the scenario, depending on lots of different things, they may be helpful for these patients. There are some other combinations of chemotherapy that can be used, other single drugs. We at Cornell have used a regimen called PEPSI, which is a low-dose oral chemotherapy regimen combination that has less toxicity than some of the intravenous regimens, but can be useful as pills as kind of a low-dose maintenance treatment. And so that's something that is sometimes being used by some people with mantle cell lymphoma. And then finally, we have stem cell transplants, and some patients get either autologous, meaning from their self, or allogeneic from someone else, stem cell transplants. And these are complicated from the standpoint of when to do them and how best to do them, and it's really a very individualized decision. But certainly for many patients with mantle cell lymphoma, discussing with your doctor whether or not a stem cell transplant is appropriate and at what point of the disease and at what type of stem cell transplant, whether it's from yourself or from someone else, and there are pros and cons of that. But that's something that patients should ask about. And for some people, those can be very useful treatments. In others, they're really not the ideal treatments. But it's something that certainly should be considered. And many patients at some point have consultations with stem cell transplant doctors just to go through these sorts of options. And then clinical trials are very commonly used, and that's one of the things that I think we're very happy about and strongly encourage, because there are many, many new treatments available in mantle cell lymphoma in clinical trials. A couple of examples of clinical trials of new drugs include the different combinations that I've talked about, using these new agents like lenalidomide, like bortezomib, like bendamustine, in these new combinations or in different settings other than we typically use them, or some new drugs. So, for instance, there's a drug called a PI3 kinase inhibitor. There were some data presented at the American Society of Clinical Oncology meeting, a drug called CAL-101. It's made by a company called Calistoga. And this is a pill that, in fact, in a very small number of mantle cell lymphoma patients, some of which have been treated at our center, the majority of them had their disease respond. And so, again, these are just getting into small number of patients, perhaps 50 to 100 patients so far, but in small numbers of patients with mantle cell lymphoma, very exciting results have been seen. And so this is one example. There are several other new drugs, whether they are antibody types of treatments or what we call kinase inhibitors, drugs that flick switches on tumor cells to make them die off or make them unhappy. Those are all possibilities. And so really, I think at any point, patients with mantle cell lymphoma should consider clinical trials, whether they're newly diagnosed, there are lots of exciting, promising things happen, whether the disease has relapsed for the first time, or whether the patient has been through many treatments and needing other options, clinical trials really are should be at the top of the list. And patients should at least consider, they're not for everybody, they're not for every situation, but should at least ask their doctor and explore the possibility with their doctor or with centers that are doing clinical trials to see if that's the right thing to consider. And then finally, I think communicating with your healthcare team is a very, very important thing. And in mantle cell lymphoma, as Dr. Williams said, there are many, it's not so much first you do A, then you do B, then you do C, and it's a very clear-cut thing. There are many, many individualized decisions that are made in mantle cell lymphoma, and that can be whether you do a treatment, which treatment do you do, and the goals of therapy, i.e., for most people, mantle cell lymphoma is something that's chronic, and many patients can live a relatively normal life. Unfortunately, not everyone, but many people do, and that's our goal, short of getting rid of it, is to do our best to let people live a normal life, and I think that in many cases we're quite successful, and that's a very realistic goal for many of our patients. But communicating with your healthcare team about what your goals of treatment, what's important to you, balancing treatments with side effects versus not side effects and controlling the disease for longer and shorter and what are your priorities are really very, very important in making sure that the treatment decisions that are made really are meeting your goals as a patient. And you really have to be aggressive in talking with your doctor and your nurse and your other members of your team to communicate that so that the decisions are being made with your best interests. And we all do, as healthcare practitioners, do want your best interests and your wishes to be at the top of the list, but you have to be very active in making those wishes known. And so with that, I will stop and turn it over to our next speaker.
Okay, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Leonard, for just a wonderful presentation and giving us lots of information and just a lot of help to everybody in terms of your topics that you covered. And I know there'll be lots of questions for you during the Q&A as well. Our next speaker is Brian Tomlinson, and Brian is Director of Programs and Services for the Lymphoma Research Foundation. And Brian, I have to say, has been instrumental in working with us in making today's program possible. So I now want to turn the program over to Brian, who's going to tell you a bit about all the services that you can access for free at the Lymphoma Research Foundation. Brian?
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you for that very warm and gracious introduction. The Lymphoma Research Foundation would like to acknowledge and thank Cancer Care for the valued partnership over the years in presenting not only the call we're all on today, but all the calls that the Foundation provides throughout the year to people affected by lymphoma, with the goal of really meeting the needs of people affected by the disease in a very efficient and effective manner. So we do thank you, Carolyn, and your team at Cancer Care for the collaboration. I would also like to thank our esteemed faculty, Drs. Leonard and Williams, for taking time out of their schedules to be with us today. These two particular individuals not only participate in this type of call, but in a number of the programs and services that I'll be mentioning to you, as well as participating on advisory boards and panels for the Foundation. So we do thank you for all the time that you provide to us. And lastly, I would like to acknowledge Millennium, the Takeda Oncology Company, for supporting today's program. The Lymphoma Research Foundation is the nation's largest lymphoma-focused nonprofit organization devoted exclusively to funding lymphoma research and providing the lymphoma community with timely information on the disease. Our mission is to eradicate lymphoma and serve those touched by this disease. Our scientific advisory board is comprised of the world's leading lymphoma researchers and oncologists. This board formulates the foundation's research portfolio, seeking out the most innovative and promising lymphoma research projects for support. I'd like to acknowledge that earlier this month, Dr. John Leonard was elected as the chair-elect of the LRF-SAB, and his two-year term will begin on July 1, 2012. The Lymphoma Research Foundation Mantle Cell Lymphoma Consortium was formed by LRF in January of 2005, and is composed of more than 100 laboratory and clinical scientists from North America and Europe who focus their research efforts on mantle cell lymphoma. LRF is the world's largest private funder of mantle cell lymphoma research. For information about the consortium, you can visit our mantle cell lymphoma specific website at mantlecelllymphoma.org. I'd like to acknowledge Dr. Michael Williams, who has served with dedication as the chair of this consortium since January of 2005. Under the direction of our scientific advisory board, the foundation has funded more than $40 million in lymphoma-specific research. The LRF provides a comprehensive series of programs and services for all of you on the phone and for all people affected by lymphoma and their loved ones. Some of these programs include our Lymphoma Helpline and Clinical Trials Information Service, where a professional public health and mental health staff can assist you in your search for clinical trials. A Lymphoma Support Network, which is the national one-to-one peer support program that matches lymphoma patients or caregivers with volunteers who have similar lymphoma-related experiences. A variety of free print and online-based publications and newsletters, which include our comprehensive disease booklets for non-Hodgkin lymphoma, Hodgkin lymphoma, chronic lymphocytic leukemia, and soon-to-be-released childhood non-Hodgkin lymphomas. A number of disease-specific fact sheets, including information on mantle cell lymphoma, and a number of informational e-newsletters. The Foundation provides a series of webcasts and podcasts that are available on specific types of lymphoma, treatment options, and support topics. We have over 80 programs currently available on our website and are continually updating them. There are several presentations specific to mantle cell lymphoma on the website. And lastly, we provide a series of in-person patient conferences on the regional and national level. Upcoming programs will be taking place in San Francisco from September 24th to the 26th, in Minneapolis on October 16th, and in New York on November 6th. If you would like additional information, please contact a member of our helpline staff or visit our website at lymphoma.org. I'll turn it back over to Carolyn, and again, a huge thank you on behalf of the Foundation to Cancer Care, our faculty, and the sponsor of today's program. Thank you, Carolyn.
Well, thank you so much, Brian, and thank you as well, and Lymphoma Research Foundation for all that you do. And this is just a wonderful resource for everybody on the call. I suspect that many of you already know about the Lymphoma Research Foundation, but if you don't and haven't taken advantage of all their wonderful services, please do contact them. It's just, they just have a really treasure trove of information for you to access and help to you. So thank you. And our next speaker is Rick Dickens, and Rick is Program Coordinator of Blood Cancers, Project Coordinated Mind Body Program at Cancer Care. And Rick is going to, and he's an oncology social worker, and Rick is going to tell you about some of the services that you can access at no cost from Cancer Care. Rick.
Thank you, Carolyn. And I want to give a special thank you to Drs. Leonard and Williams for your very informative presentation. I think this is one of the most informative and wonderful Connect workshops I've heard, and I really appreciate the information shared with me and the many people listening. And Brian and the LRF Lymphoma Research Foundation, we collaborate with them many times, and as Carolyn said, a wonderful organization. A diagnosis of cancer is difficult for patients and those who love and work with them. Cancer Care has over 40 master's degree social workers specializing in oncology who are here to help you resolve some of the conflicts that might arise and ultimately help you find some peace. Now, that might be emotional peace through one of our many professionally facilitated telephone, online, and face-to-face groups, or in a counseling intervention with one of our oncology social workers. Peace can be some respite from financial concerns through one of our financial grants or one of our Cancer Care fact sheets. And finally, knowledge and peace of mind can come through one of our Connect workshops like today, or guidance on how to navigate the complicated world of cancer treatment, healthcare communication, insurance issues, and in providing community-based resources that perhaps you weren't aware of. Some brief tips that can guide you along this process: do your research. The Internet is a good place to start, but there are also many helpful organizations such as Cancer Care that can guide you through this process. Becoming a knowledgeable consumer will go a long way toward making you an active member in your treatment decisions, something that Dr. Leonard spoke so eloquently about. Take your time. Saying "I need a day to think about this" can give you an opportunity to catch your breath and get feedback from loved ones and other resources. And finally, speak up. Remember, your doctor and oncology team can't treat a problem if you don't make them aware of it. At Cancer Care, we can't promise to solve all of the concerns that arise out of a cancer diagnosis and treatment. But with over 60 years in the ever-changing field of oncology, we are dedicated to trying, one patient and one family at a time. You can reach us at www.cancercare.org or call and speak to a social worker at 1-800-813-HOPE, which is 4673. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Rick, for so wonderfully presenting all the services of Cancer Care. And now we do have lots of time for questions. And I'm going to ask Janitha to bring all of our speakers on board so they're all ready to answer your questions. And I'm going to ask Janitha to explain to all of you how to queue up for questions. We'll take one question at a time. And if we do not get to your question, I'll repeat this number twice, please, if you don't get to ask your question, call Cancer Care at the end of the call or Lymphoma Research Foundation, because we'll be able to answer your question. So you can call either 1-800-813-4673 number, or you can call Lymphoma Research Foundation and at their number, and their staff will be able to answer your question as well. And their number is 1-800-500-9976. Okay, and now would you explain to people how to queue up for questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touch tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Our first question is from Courtney B. Go ahead, please.
Have any studies been done using Femara to cure MCL?
Okay, thank you for that question. Dr. Leonard, could you address that question?
I didn't quite hear it using, it sounded like you said Femara, is that correct?
Yes,
it sounded like it was on a speaker, so I couldn't really
tell. It was Femara.
So to my knowledge, Femara, and maybe Dr. Williams can also comment, is associated, it's a hormonal-based therapy that's been used a great deal in breast cancer, if I'm understanding correctly, and I'm not aware of any data of that in mantle cell lymphoma, and given the differences between breast cancer and mantle cell lymphoma, I would not expect that there would be a role for Femara. Certainly there's no proven role that I'm aware of, and that's not something that I've at all used in mantle cell lymphoma.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Excellent. Thank you for that question. Our next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Suzanne S. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yes, hi. Your question?
Hi. Yes. When my husband was diagnosed back in 2002, I was given an estimate, I guess you could call it, of 3-year survival rate. He's relapsed. He's on Revlimid now in a clinical trial. I'm just curious, twofold. Number one, has the survival rate changed any from 2002, where it was approximately 3 years survival? And two, how does it change once it's relapsed? Is there a different survival rate?
Thank you for that question. Dr. Leonard, could you address that question?
Sure. So a couple of things. I mean, it's important to keep in mind whenever anyone hears anything about survival rates that that is for a group of patients, not an individual. So an individual's going to live a short time, a long time, somewhere in between, and the statistics only go so far. So I am not a big statistics person from the standpoint of, you know, quoting people this sort of thing. And I think for an individual, it's not all that helpful. So I would, and people may have heard similar sorts of numbers or things in mantle cell lymphoma, and I would just say that for an individual, it's not particularly useful or particularly meaningful. That being said, when you look at groups of patients with mantle cell lymphoma, actually the number you quote is out of date. And one of the encouraging things that we've heard and seen recently is actually that the median survival, meaning kind of the average people, the average, so to speak, has been much longer and, in fact, at least doubled in mantle cell lymphoma. So there is no question that people are living longer with mantle cell lymphoma, and I am sure that there are people on the line here who have been much longer than that, and I have people in my practice that are much longer than that. And so, and I have no doubt that those numbers will continue to improve because of the new treatments that we have, the better supportive care that we have, and the progress that we're making. So I think also those numbers are obsolete because someone diagnosed 10 or 20 years ago has had different options available that were not as good as what we have today. So, you know, I think the sky is the limit, and my hope is that we will cure patients with mantle cell lymphoma. I think very realistically that people can live a very, hopefully, long, and my goal is with my patients to have a normal life, that they, you know, die of something else at a ripe old age. They may have to deal with mantle cell lymphoma many times over that, or sometimes over that period. But I'm optimistic, and I think there is reason for people on the line to be optimistic. That being said, when the disease comes back, one used to always think that, well, you know, things get worse as time goes on because the disease gets resistant over time and things don't work as well. And while in some cases that is the case, that is true, in other cases, particularly when we use drugs that work in a different way, you may use a different drug or a different regimen that works in a different way and, in fact, find that the second treatment works better and longer than the first treatment, and the fifth treatment can work longer than and better than the second or third treatment, depending on the situation. And so I think all of these things are really individualized, and I think when you start making generalizations, particularly in mantle cell lymphoma, which, as Dr. Williams said, is a very variable disease among people, I think I wouldn't get too caught up in expectations. I think every individual is different, and that's why you have to talk to your doctor about your specific situation to know what's best for you and what to expect out of your situation based on the scenario.
Excellent. Thank you so much, and I appreciate your question and the answer that hopefully was helpful to you. Our next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from David M. Go ahead, please.
I am a 7-year survivor after hypercevad with the high dose ARC under Dr. Gua, and just read this month's blood, the type 2 CD20 antibodies. Can you comment on that, if we're going to see that in the United States at all?
Thank you very much for your question. Dr. Williams, would you like to address that question?
Sure. So that's great news, David. You've had a very nice response to the hypercevad, as a number of patients do. So that's great to hear. There are, you know, among the newer approaches to lymphomas in general, but it also comes to bear on mantle cell, are these next generation of anti-CD20 monoclonal antibodies. Of course, rituximab has been the paradigm. It was the first antibody used as immunotherapy for cancer, and it's really revolutionized the way we treat many types of B-cell lymphoma and has been helpful in mantle cell. There is, as you suggest, there are several new antibodies either targeting CD20 or some other protein on the tumor cell surface that have shown activity. One of these, ofatumumab, has been approved in the U.S. for treating chronic lymphocytic leukemia. That and other agents are now being studied in lymphomas as well. And I think it's quite likely because they may bind a bit different position on the protein or a different protein entirely. They may have different capabilities in activating your immune system to fight the lymphoma cells. So I think these are going to find use in lymphomas and hopefully in mantle cell, and that they will sort of add to the sequence of therapies that we can use. So as Dr. Leonard was just commenting to the last question, you know, the you know, there have been lots of improvements for patients with this disease, and part of that is we just have a lot more arrows in the quiver now that we can shoot at the disease, and so this kind of sequential therapy helps make this into hopefully a tolerable chronic disease that one can live with hopefully relatively few side effects. And so in that regard, because they're generally well tolerated and can be very effective, these newer antibodies are something that we're all very hopeful will add importantly to our new treatment approaches.
Thank you so much. Our next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Thomas Z. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'm actually asking about if do you have any information on mantle histiocyte retrovirus?
Thank you for that question. Dr. Leonard, would you like to address that?
Yes, unfortunately, I don't have any information specifically on that entity. I'm not sure if that's an entity that there are certain viruses that are certain associated with certain lymphomas. Mantle cell lymphoma specifically, to my knowledge, has not been associated with any particular viral causes of lymphoma. And so I don't know that that bears on, and certainly Dr. Williams can chime in if he knows something I don't on this, or maybe I'm missing something in the description. I would not associate, and we typically do not associate viruses, which can be associated with certain types, particularly T-cell lymphomas, with mantle cell lymphoma.
Yeah, I agree. That's correct. At our mantle cell consortium workshops that Brian commented on earlier, we hear lots about pathogenesis and, you know, development of these malignancies, and there really hasn't been any information that's kind of hit our radar screen about any retrovirus or other viral etiology for mantle cell.
Thank you. Our next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Natalie M. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Can you please discuss the use of Rituxan as maintenance therapy? You mentioned it, Dr. Williams, briefly. My mother just completed, she had 6 rounds of hyper-CVAD followed by autologous stem cell transplant. She was already showing her PET clear after the 4th round of the CVAD, and she's about 5 weeks out after stem cell transplant, and they're suggesting now maintenance Rituxan.
Nellie, thank you for that question. Excellent. Dr. Williams?
Sure. It's a very good question, and I might just comment sort of in a more global remark that maintenance rituximab has gotten a lot of interest in prolonging the response of a variety of non-Hodgkin lymphomas, especially indolent lymphomas. There's not been, you know, mature data yet on using rituximab as maintenance therapy in mantle cell lymphoma specifically. So there's nothing we can say that would tell us that is going to be a useful thing to do in terms of randomized comparative data. Now, that said, there are some intriguing reports that help us think that perhaps for at least selected patients, there may be some real benefit to that. And the one that bears most directly on your mother's situation is that the Nordic study that I mentioned earlier tested what we call minimal residual disease. So they used very sensitive markers for tiny amounts of residual mantle cell lymphoma that either were present after people finished intensive therapy plus transplant or that reappeared when they were being monitored during follow-up. And there were a small number of patients who were in a remission who had a, if you will, a molecular relapse. So in other words, just the small population of cells reappeared in the blood or the bone marrow during follow-up with no clinical relapse. And those patients were treated with rituximab, and some of them then became molecularly negative again. In other words, they went back into a molecular remission, presumably by suppressing that early emergence of relapse, then it gave them a longer duration of response. So data like that doesn't tell us that everybody should be getting rituximab, but it certainly helps us generate approaches and hypotheses that should be tested, and indeed it is being tested now in a number of studies. So what do we do right now, since it's, you know, these studies aren't going to be available to inform the decision your mother has to make. So I can't say that that's right or a right or wrong thing to do. If she still has some detectable disease, treating with rituximab is reasonable, and it could be then monitored. But I think that's sort of as far as we can go with the recommendation right now.
And so now you'll take that information back to your treating healthcare team and perhaps ask them more questions so that you and your mother can feel comfortable about what the decisions that you make. Thank you. Well, I want to thank our speakers today. They have just been outstanding, really. And I want to thank all of you who have asked such wonderful questions that really have enhanced our call today really remarkably. I want to remind all of you this is a one-hour program, 1 hour in length, and that that means that we often cannot get to everyone's question. So I want to remind all of you that you now have, although the program itself may be ending very soon, you still have access to all these organizations, and in particular, Lymphoma Research Foundation and Cancer Care. I want to be sure you know their numbers. It's in all your materials. But the Lymphoma Research Foundation's number is 1-800-500-9976, and Cancer Care's number is 1-800-813-4673. We all have staff waiting to take your questions, so if you didn't get to ask a question, please do call us. Most importantly, as we conclude our call today, I do not want anyone to feel that you're alone in coping with cancer, with mantle cell lymphoma. I want you to now feel that you're part of a community of support and that there are lots of resources for you, and that we have staff at both organizations and all of our collaborating organizations to provide you with the support that you need. So please do take advantage of all of these free services to help you each, and not so that you don't have to feel that you're dealing with this all by yourself. Again, I want to thank you for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may disconnect and have a wonderful day.